If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at osirispod.com to stay in the loop. Relix Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relix.com. The show starts now.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Unaware from Alan Stone's self-titled sophomore release. That song was released some 8 years ago and has amassed well over 7 million views on YouTube. Since then, Stone has put out Radius in 2015 with a bonus version in 2016. This year, he has his sights on putting out yet another album. This soul singer has a lot to say and recently appeared on American Idol as a guest coach. We caught up with him on his tour bus as he continues his three-month tour with Andrew McMahon, Zach Clark, and Bob Oxblood, aptly named Pen and Piano Tour. Our conversation started when I asked Stone about participating on American Idol when he is a self-made musician from very humble beginnings.
Well, because I have bills. And
fair.
And, you know, I think it's funny because a lot of people believe that the independent route means just automatically that the human being only wants to tour in a van. They only want to play, you know, shows that are at venues where the green rooms have a lot of wieners all over the walls. You know, it just automatically sort of puts them in this place where they don't, they want to be a subculture. I think independent music has sort of found this throughout the years place of, well, pop culture is just not where we want to exist. And for me, I was an independent artist out of necessity. I was an independent artist because nobody would sign me. Nobody would give me money to make a record. So I had to figure out a way to make music and make a record with no money whatsoever. And that places you in a category of independent, really, just kind of automatically. To me, though, I mean, man, when you take a song and you write it and you take it out of your bedroom and you show it to people, I think the same emotion exists in that mindset as anybody who sells their music to a Neutrogena T-Gel commercial. It's like you want the most people to hear it,
right?
You believe you've poured your time and your effort and your emotion into this piece of music, and it's like a child. It's like, I mean, granted, I don't have children, so that's not a fair analogy. I'm sure a child is much more difficult to raise and to nurture than a song, but you kind of create this thing, and you want people to see it, and you want to know what people think of it, and you kind of ultimately, at least me personally, behind in the back of your mind, you want to play it for as many people as possible. And, you know, being kind of... being somebody who started out as an independent artist doing music for myself and really creating music in an independent way.
Right.
When you get an opportunity for, you know, millions of people to hear you do what you do, I think you'd be a fool not to take it. You know, whether it's American Idol, I mean, there's some, you know, there's some TV shows or looks that, yeah, are a little bit
sketch, different
than others, but
right.
But you know, it's the numbers don't lie on a TV show like that. I think they were saying, like, my management was telling me when they were asking me if I wanted to do it, I was like, ah, man, well, you know, it's kind of like daytime TV. They're like, look, Saturday Night Live, I think it's 1.5 million viewers per episode.
Yep.
When it's doing well. And American Idol gets 8 million when it's doing shitty.
Right.
It's like, oh my God. All right. Well, sign me up for being a daytime television. You know, I'm just trying to get my music out there and
I get it to
get people to show up to shows, really.
You know, speaking of huge numbers, your video, your live video for Unaware has eclipsed like over 7 million views on YouTube. That's your audience, right? That's people seeking you out and seeking more knowledge about who Alan Stone is and how he does his thing. I mean, that's an impressive number. Is it ever overwhelming to you that this that your fan base is potentially that large?
No, I mean, well, luckily I've figured out a way to just buy 50 different iMac computers, and I have that video on loop on each of them. That's in a warehouse.
True. That's not true. Come on. That's you are. You know, that's funny, but not true.
That's not true at all. You know, that song has just given me more than I could have ever hoped or imagined or wished for. I mean, that's still the song that people refer to. That's the song I wrote and recorded. That live session is easily, I mean, I recorded that in 2011.
Right.
It's old. And people still refer back to it and use that song to audition for TV shows and, you know, to, oh man, this was my audition song to get into Berkeley. I was just in Boston a couple weeks ago and all these Berkeley kids were stopping me on the street like, yo, dude, I did Unaware from my, you know, my thesis or my recital. I'm like, wow, man, that's really flattering that song is still turning people's ears. There must be, right, a good song is just kind of a capture of a time frame and an emotion,
right?
Because it all happens in this like very small amount of time, and if you do it like I record music, which is I try to do it as live as possible, meaning you rehearse the shit out of the song and then you got 3 minutes to nail the take.
Right.
You know, you go and you like try to capture an emotion right then. And, you know, what's super cool about that YouTube video, is that that's all a live take and a live emotion that like, even watching it now, I'm trying to think the last time I watched that video, but you can step back into that time frame of what I was and who I was in that moment. I was broke. We recorded that video for $1,000. I had $1,000, to record like 3 live videos. And I convinced my friends to like learn these songs. I had a buddy who had a camera. Like, hey man, you know, you think you could come and do it on like for free? You know, none of us in that moment would have ever expected that a video like that or a performance like that. I mean, I got booked on Conan because of that video. I got to play American Idol because of that video. I got to travel and play music on essentially every continent in the world besides Antarctica because of this like 3-minute emotional reciting of a song that I wrote, which I didn't even do it to form, you know, like we had recorded that song previously. And I was like, man, well, let me try and stretch on this like back outro part. And, it's a wonderful thing. Although having to sing that note at the end of that song every night for like 7 years, I'm like, man, I shouldn't have stretched so hard. Damn it.
What you need to do is get your audience to sing that part, and then you absolve yourself of the need to do it yourself.
Perfect. Yeah, I just need to get a whistle, like a dog whistle.
Or somebody to hit a loop or something, a guitar pedal or something.
I'm sure
there's ways of doing it. What it also has afforded you to do is have a great career. I mean, you're only really 8 years into this thing since Last to Speak was released. And really what it's allowed you to do is have a pretty prolific career putting out, you know, three records and one with some deluxe pieces and then the stuff you're working on now. I mean, it's enabled you to reach a much wider audience than, say, the church you were singing at back in Washington State.
Yeah, you're totally right. I think it's crazy to think because of all the miles I've put on my body in those 8 years, you know, you kind of step away from a situation like that and you go, man, we've been grinding for a minute now. But I mean, in all reality, first and foremost, 8 years of being an artist and paying my rent is a dream that I never felt I would ever realize. So that's just a miracle in itself. But in all actuality, I think you're right. It's not, it's just the budding seeds. You know, they talk about that 10-year moment and that the 10,000 hours that you put into a craft before you actually start understanding what it takes to really utilize that craft and that ability. And it's great. I mean, I actually kind of feel coming up, you know, on that 10-year mark that I'm finding my place. I've always felt a little out of place being, right. You know, a kind of a weird hippie cat from the Pacific Northwest singing R&B and soul music. I've always felt a little out of place and like I didn't belong. And I think that, you know, coming up on that 10,000 hour, 10-year mark, I'm starting to feel comfortable in my own skin and comfortable with my abilities and also comfortable with my failures and comfortable with things that I can't do.
Right.
Which is, I think, just as important to realize as what you can do, right?
Does it come down to the lyrics more than the packaging around it? Does it come down to the songs that you write? I mean, whether it is your most recent release, Brown Eyed Lover, or the tracks that are on, well, any of your records, really, but does it ultimately come down to the songs and the way they're performed rather than, you know, the record label or the audience's opinion of what R&B and soul and hip hop should look like? I mean, ultimately that is what it's about, right? The songs.
I don't know. It's music is an anomaly to me still to this day after trying to put a science on what it is.
Yep.
For so long. Like, is it the way I look? Is it the person that I'm dating? You know, how do I get people to pay attention to me? Is it the song? Is it the time of year that the song is released? Is it the snare? Is it, I mean, like, there's so many elements involved in a recipe for what makes a song a hit.
Right.
That it's almost like you kind of just got to throw your hands up in the air. You got to get in the studio, write music that feels good to you, and then release, like, let it go out of your hands. That's right. Kind of what really works well for me, or that I'm learning to trust, is the process of just getting in the studio, completing a thought, which is a song, sending it to the label, sending it to management, and going, here. And if they're into it, then we go, all right, well, let's move from there. And if they're not into it, you go, okay, let's try it again. Because the like I said, the science of what would make a hit song, like, nobody has that down. Nobody does.
Right.
The songs on a record that people are like, or the songs on a record that I'm connected to that I think are super sick, they always end up being the one that nobody cares about.
Right.
And the songs that, like, I dislike the most are always the ones that get the most traction, that get people most excited. So I've kind of relinquished my tiring ways of attempting to figure out the perfect recipe for the hit song.
Right. I just mean the hit song. I mean, not every song is going to be unaware. I mean more like just the songs that you write come from a place that either people connect with or don't. And it doesn't matter that you're not from Detroit or from Philly or from wherever soul music or hip hop or R&B comes from, right? That's what
totally.
I mean.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So I listened to, I've given Brown Eyed Lover a great many spins. And the one thing that I'm a little bit confused about is the departure from a very organic feel in production to, how do I say this? A more modern feel in production with, you know, more sounds and more electric sounds. Is that, Is that you coming of age as an artist? Is that you wanting to experiment with more things than what, you know, we've come accustomed to hearing on your records?
I think it's a lot of things, right? When you execute a sound, you're kind of, you know, to me, my musical choices and musical likes have changed throughout the years. I've also done this record is done with a different producer, you know, different producers find different sounds, and you go, oh man, yeah, that's cool. Let's go with that. What's funny is, Organic, that song is played totally live.
Right.
So that's actually a song that's probably more organic than the other records I've done, because the other records I've done, we sort of pieced them together, you know, like, okay, here's the drum loop. Let's like lay down the drum. Okay. Let's live. Okay. Let's find the bass to that. And then you would kind of collage a song together.
Right.
And Brown Eyed Lover, we just did that all in the studio together. But we played around with different effects and different keyboards and different processors. I think for me, I always want to evolve. I want all my records to sound different. I don't want to get as a music fan.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at like a Stevie Wonder career, every one of his records felt and seemed different, and the through ingredients was his voice. You always knew it was a Stevie record because you heard his voice.
Right.
But if you listen to songs in the key of life versus Inner Visions, you know, that's different music. If you go into, you know, the catalog of music, with I Just Called to Say I Love You.
Yes, very,
you know, that,
different.
Like, it's like, what is that? That's a Stevie song? So, yeah, I always just want to try and play with new colors, man. That's the fun part about it, is you get a chance to sort of reinvent yourself every time you get the opportunity to get in the studio, and that's the fun part for me.
The Pen and Piano Tour is underway, and I'm curious about how somebody who relies on their instruments, specifically their voice, can keep it going for months at a time on the road in environments that are so different day to day. I mean, what's the secret to keeping that thing working?
Yeah, well, I have a traveling pharmacist with just needles that just inject into my neck before every show. No, I think it's a learned craft, touring.
Yeah.
And keeping your voice on point. It's almost, like, to me, the hardest part is traveling. I don't get paid to play music. I get paid to travel.
Right, that's the work.
Because the traveling is the work. The music is the rewarding part. It's like what you actually get up for. You're like, yeah, I get to share my songs tonight. It's the, like, you know, sleeping on a little bunk on a studio apartment with wheels with, like, 10 other guys that people pay me for. But I think in the last few years of my life, before, when I was young, when I was 23, 24, and I first started touring, you know, 80% of the year, I was just throw and go. I could rage every night and somehow was fine during the show to play and sing for 2.5 hours. I don't know why. I mean, maybe, you know, I was blessed with just a stability in my vocal cords that I could just beat them half to death and still have them the next day. Now it's quite different. I can't rage. And I have to, you know, I've had to implement like a lot of exercise and cardio. I've had to implement breathing exercises. I've had to implement diet restriction. And that's not just for my voice. That's kind of a lot to do with with just overall health. You know, I think when you travel as much as I do, and you play as many shows on the road, the worst feeling you can have is getting up on stage and not being able to give your best performance. And so when that's happened, I mean, that's definitely happened to me a few times. It's a nightmare. You feel so ashamed that these people have paid their hard earned money and you can't give them exactly what it is you know you can give. So, thank God for those moments, because I think it just sort of renegotiates how you're going to execute your life. And to me, like, things like yoga and breathing, warming up like 4 hours before the show, all these things really have helped me keep it all together when I'm on the road.
Brown Eyed Lover is the first single on a yet to be announced, yet to be confirmed record that's due out sometime in 2018. Are those pieces together? Have you written the songs? Have you recorded that material yet? Or is that something that you have to get back to when this work thing is done, when you can get back to the craft of making a record?
Yeah, there's probably about 20 songs recorded for that project. I still feel I'm a couple songs short. Wow. And so I'll have to go back in and find those extra two, so that we can kind of shrink that project down to about 10 songs. 10 to 12 songs is kind of my sweet spot for a record.
Right.
So yeah, I think I got a little bit of more work to do, but I'm not far away. I'm not far away from getting a project out to my fan base that I'm proud to show them and that I really believe they'll connect with.
Has your life from those early days writing by yourself has evolved, but, and you know, with an impending marriage on its way, are you writing about different things? I mean, even the idea of Brown Eyed Lover is something that you could have never experienced back at home, just living, you know, back in Washington, not being on the road, not being away from a loved one. That evolution is certainly going to come through in the music that you're writing now, as it always has. Just another life stage, right?
Yeah, I used to be really opposed to writing love songs. Actually,
wow,
like I just had this stance of like R&B music. The only thing people talk about in R&B music is sex and the club and love.
Mm-hmm.
And it got so sick of it. I was just like, give me some content. Give me some consciousness. Talk about some real shit.
Right.
And then I fell in love, and I had this juxtaposition of the road and trying to maintain this dream that I've found myself sort of floating within, and also maintain a relationship with somebody that I love very much. And it naturally came out as a love song. I think that song is just as personal to me as any other tune I've written. I'm definitely writing from a position that's different. I think it's a lot more sound and stable, the angle that I'm writing from currently, just because of adjustments I've made in my own personal life and things that I've evolved towards and with. Everything evolves, you know. It's all evolution, and it feels good to be comfortable in that evolution.
But there's still room, obviously, within the evolution for songs of social and political issue, like Contact High and What I've Seen. I mean, those are still obviously, you still have a mind and you still want to speak your mind, but it's just probably evolved at this point.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, even my viewpoints on some of those songs.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you write songs for the 23-year-old that when you turn 31, you go, oh, maybe I was a little bit ignorant in my position.
Right.
On this specific subject. You know, for me, it's the social and political thing is beautiful, you know, and I understand the stance because I've written from it a lot, but for me, man, I'm so much more on the tip of escapism. You know, to me, people go to a show, they turn on music, they listen to songs because they want to escape from the realities of the world that are realities of the world, but it's just like, man, like, I just want to disappear from the political climate currently. I want to just like turn off the news and forget that like we are constantly on the tip of destruction, that every single country in the world has nuclear warheads that could end life as we know it in a moment. I want to forget about that shit. I want to go to a concert. I want to hear somebody sing and emote emotion that makes me forget about all of this awful stuff.
Right.
And it took me so long to realize that that's what I do for music.
Right.
Like when I fall in love with an artist, I'm not like dissecting their lyrics and going, oh, you know, you are right that like the the relationship with North Korea is really, really shifty, and we, you know, who knows what that guy is capable of. No, like I fall into music and I get lost in music to make me forget
right.
about what's happening around me. And so I'm so much more on the tip of the actual difference I can make, and the actual power that I yield is giving people a comfortable place to forget about the chaos
right.
that is around us at all times. So I think my writing is definitely, my writing on this next record is very evident of that, you know, attempting to try and give people space to exist in a venue for 2 hours and just forget. Almost like a, you know, a nice massage, or, you know, any beautiful activity that we can do as humans to kind of release the toxin, which is, you know, social and political environments currently and just all the time. I mean, it's just this constant like back and forth,
right?
It's like just negative magnets going back and forth. And I mean, the issues now in comparison to 8 years ago when I was writing song are just absurd. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe we're like farther away from being settled
right.
than we were 8 years ago. It was like, good God, how did we go backwards? This is just so deplorable.
Right.
But that's kind of where my writing has come from.
I was going to leave it there, but I do need to know what you're listening to in the van, in the bus. I need to know what you're listening to get away from CNN and Fox News and the president of the United States. I not only me, but I think your audience and our audience needs to know what you're digging and who you should listen to.
I've been going back a lot. I've been going backwards in my musical enjoyment. Been listening to a lot of Bill Withers recently. I've been listening to quite a bit of Aretha and some Nina Simone.
Right.
As far as current artists, I've been kind of getting the fellas on this trip have been introducing me to the Bahamas.
Yep.
Been getting into that record. Dawes, we've been listening to a lot on this trip. The fellas on this tour aren't R&B guys.
Right.
And so they've been introducing me to a lot of like the stuff that they get excited about, which is always cool it's always cool to get lost with other people as like a bonding experience too. Like, oh, what are you getting into? You know, they show me, I'm like, oh, this is cool, man. So a lot of it has been kind of outside of the R&B soul realm. But
right.
Yeah, those are a few that we've been listening to on the bus.
Cool.
Counting Crows. We've been jamming the shit out of some Counting Crows,
wow.
Man. I always forget how much I love the Counting Crows.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they've been at it for a while. Continued success, dude. And we're looking forward to the new record. And you're in town in Toronto at the end of the month, so I'm looking forward to taking in the show and maybe saying hi, but seriously, like, you make awesome music, and no matter the label, we appreciate it. And so continued success, and continue doing what you do, and creating a haven for people who want to get away from the bullshit that surrounds us.
I really appreciate your kindness, bud. Thanks so much for your time and for your wonderful questions.
Insightful, bright, and an incredible talent. That's the holy grail probably when it comes to being a musician in 2018. With pending nuptials and more touring and recording in his future, Stone is a busy dude with a lot on the go. Look out for his new release soon and catch him on the road this spring and summer. For more info on Alan Stone, visit alanstone.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to Brown Eyed Lover, his latest song, To Whet Your Appetite, ahead of the new album.
Been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, Visit thesoundpodcast.com.
Osiris.